Good night, class. It's Professor Knight here. Tonight we'll be learning about history. Hopefully you have your sensor phones on, and you're comfortably relaxing in bed. As always, I highly recommend you try to fall asleep at some point during the lesson, as retention increases by almost 50% when students are sleeping while ingesting new information. Your brain is developing new neural pathways, and during that time, you're more likely to retain data than you are during your waking state. So, with that said, I hope you find sleep at some point during this lesson. Today, we'll be covering history from the 21st century all the way to the 25th century, pertaining to human expansion into the galaxy. For many of you, this might seem like distant history, but I assure you, it is both incredibly interesting and incredibly important, as it does inform our current state of affairs now. So I highly recommend you pay attention, although for many of you, you won't have to. You'll be blissfully asleep, and the data will just be ingested into your head. Anyway, let us begin. We'll start at the beginning, the space race. As far back as the 1960s, man was trying to get into space. It began with Sputnik, an unmanned Russian satellite that orbited the Earth, and ended with the Apollo programs. Apollo was the first vessel to land on another celestial body, the Moon. It landed there, three astronauts. Two descended onto the surface. One stayed in a capsule that orbited, and all three of them returned safely. Apollo is very important, as it is the first tangible piece of evidence that humanity got that there was an ability to leave the planet, to venture into the void of space in a meaningful way. I think it also sparked in the imagination the idea of human colonization of celestial bodies. The problem was cost. It was incredibly cost prohibitive to do such a venture. It would be almost 100 years before there was a real tangible attempt to have a human colony on the Moon, and that was obviously the Chinese with the Chinese station, which lasted about 25 years on the lunar surface before having to return back due to political instability and the inevitable fall of a series of major governments in the corporatocratic uprising of the late 21st century. The corporatocratic uprising had a series of ramifications. One led to a new system of government on Earth, one that hadn't been seen before. Nations ruled by corporations, which created both abundance but a reduce in liberties on Earth, which was another continuing factor to people wanting to leave. Governments outside of the corporatocratic nation decided that leaving Earth was essential to maintaining liberties and freedoms that they had once grown accustomed to, which is now being limited. The corporations grew incredibly aggressively, and they too also wished to seek for the stars and made concerted efforts to go to space, mostly in search of asteroids, mineable asteroids. At this point, Earth's global warming had aggressively accelerated, meaning there was less and less living space on Earth, less farming space. There was the two mass animal die-offs, the first one at the beginning of the 22nd century, and then the second one around the end of the 22nd century. The biodiversity on Earth dropped by almost 70% by the end of the second die-off, as temperatures rose aggressively along with sea levels. It was an imperative to leave Earth at that point. It was able to sustain life, but in a way that required such human intervention that costs were becoming prohibitive. So, the first big foray into space was the asteroid wrangling. Many corporations were looking at asteroids as a means of providing material that could then be used in subsequent development of off-planet locations. There were two main candidates. The first one, Venus. Venus had a great atmosphere at high elevations. The pressure was perfect. And it had a lot of gas, which was mineable. The second was Mars. Mars, a terrestrial world, but one that had great challenges. One that was seen almost 100 years earlier in the 21st century. People like Elon Musk and Sir Richard Branson, they used their corporation to try to send men to these planets, primarily Mars, and they discovered that it was almost inhospitable. It would be almost until the late 23rd century before we had a permanent human settlement on Mars. But again, that settlement had numerous issues with water, food, electricity, and keeping the habitat sustainable for life. It's when we found the Martian virus and basically outlawed the consumption of Martian water. Martian virus obviously killing the entire population of the initial Mars settlements. They were unaware that the water was tainted. They didn't know there was a pathogen inside of it. And upon consumption, it was lethal to both humans and animals, ultimately resulting in a ghost colony, which to this day you can still visit. There are still tours that bring you that far into the interior to this day. So perhaps one of your parents will take you to either Mars or Venus or, there isn't, the station over Earth has since decayed and there's no humans on Earth, but you can pass by and take an orbital view if you're so fortunate. I went about two summers ago. It was beautiful. It was really something to see the place where early man was founded. It really gave us a good sense of place. The colony on Venus, of course, is still functional, although much of what was mineable can be found elsewhere, mostly through sun harvesting. So the need for that colony has dramatically declined, and personnel there is almost non-existent, almost completely done by automation, hence why very few ships go into the interior. Anyway, continuing onward. We found most of our success in colonization, at least within the solar system, in the spaces outside of the asteroid belt. Of course, the asteroid belt was a primary location for harvesting of rare and valuable resources, such as iron, nickel, cobalt, things that were used subsequently on the colonies on Titan and on Europa. In fact, Europa was the first place we found life outside of Earth. Of course, it wasn't sentient life in the way that humans are, but it was life, animal life, well below the ice. Those discoveries were critical. In fact, a lot of the medicines that we're using currently required the understanding of that life, and a lot of the vaccines and ways we've been able to prolong our life well into the 200s was because of the research done on Europa. So you should be very thankful for those men and women who spent many years of their lives underneath the ice of Europa. Finally, that brings us to leaving the solar system. Of course, it required the quantum drive. Using our understanding of quantum physics, we were able to use a drive to harness the uncertainty of molecules to move large vessels between two points instantaneously in the galaxy. And obviously that dropped the cost of moving goods down to almost zero, but the issue is accounting for gravitational pull, and there's only so many spaces you can move, and obviously this is something for your later physics class to delve into. But needless to say, the quantum drive was critical for interstellar travel, And without it, I doubt we would have left the soul system in any kind of meaningful way, using the base impulse drives that were so common in the day. To give you some perspective, it would take an average ship, human ship, around 4 years to reach Titan from Earth. Now, with modern impulse drives, that journey would take less than a year, and with a quantum drive, we can get from Alpha Centauri to Sol in less than a month. That kind of speed is astounding, especially when you consider the speeds of the past. Some crafts took years to reach from Earth to the edge of the solar system, which, boggles the mind currently, but that's how it was a long time ago, and it just goes to show the slow increase of science and technology. But let's go back to the political sphere, because we talked about the expansion sphere, but we didn't really talk about the political sphere. Of course, we touched upon the corporocratic nations, the corporations who have bounded together to form basically governments of themselves, and their governments derived from the need to serve the corporation. And then there was the free states, who had a series of different governments. Obviously, communism and socialism was still prevalent and around, and there were some democracies, but after some of the democratic uprisings and failings of the late 21st century, it seemed unlikely that democratic nations were sustainable, for a few reasons. One is the stability of of an electorate. And the ability to be influenced from outside spheres was also very prevalent. It was really the invention of the AI state which challenged the corporate nations. The AI state was brilliant. A machine was fashioned to serve a nation and its needs. It would be the hub of the nation, almost serving the role of a president or prime minister. It was both the president, the prime minister, and the legal system, all in one, and it was able to act with efficiency and fairness in a way that a human system never could. It was the states that adopted the AI systems first that succeeded the greatest. Most of them were socialist nations. Many democratic nations were too afraid to adopt such a radical system, and ultimately, due to democratic gridlock, and then subsequent civil wars, those nations collapsed, broke apart, and were either absorbed by the corporocratic nations or dissolved into almost like a feudal anarchy. In fact, it was around this time when nations that weren't aligned kind of devolved back into feudalism. The prevalence of firearms greatly increased that. And in these feudal state nations, although technology was great, they were very similar to medieval feudal nations, and they had a lot of infighting. People were vying for political power, social power. Rising social strata was very difficult in these nations, and ultimately it led to a great deal of instability for these nations, and many of the time, those nations failed to become spacefaring. Ultimately, it was the AI nations and the corporocratic nations that found their way into space, into the stars, and currently they are the two biggest powerhouses in terms of colonization. The peace treaty between the two still stands to this day. It's lasted about 2 centuries, and I believe it'll hold steady. The AI nation obviously has computed any action against the corporate nations and has deemed that any action would lead to human loss that's unacceptable. And obviously, the corporate nations have no interest in hurting their financial gains by this peace, allowing free trade and all that stuff. So ultimately, this peace seems like it will last indefinitely, and I hope it does, because as united, we are much stronger than apart. There's so much more of space we have yet to explore. And the possibility of intelligent life out there that is not human it's very likely. If we were able to get to this point, it goes to reason that other sentient beings could become spacefaring as well. And if they have, we do not know if they will be friendly or if they'll be hostile. As I've said before in previous lessons, the history of man is the history of war. We don't know this if this is true of other species, but from our understanding of sentient life, it perhaps may be true. And if it is, humanity must be prepared. That concludes our lesson for today. I hope you found sleep and ingested this information completely. There'll be more lessons in the future. Good night.